Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Albion Roar Down Under, sponsored by Pure Media. My name is Richard Parker here in Auckland, New Zealand, and joining me every week is the founder of the Seagulls Down Under Supporters Club, Steve Longley. With only four games left, Albion sit pretty on 36 points, a clear 7-point margin between us and Southampton in 18th place. Surely we've done enough now to secure Premier League football for another year. So today we will be reviewing the Spurs game last week, where Brighton battled hard to earn a 1-1 draw against the fourth place side. And I'll be asking Steve for his view on the recent end of year awards, with Pascal Gross winning Player of the Year and Lewis Dunk winning Players Player of the Year. Our special guest this week will be a very familiar voice to Brighton fans around the world. I guarantee he will have given you goosebumps at some point with his expert commentary under extreme emotion, especially last season. It's BBC Sussex football commentator Johnny Canter. Welcome to the show.
Hi, guys.
How you doing?
Yeah, all good here. Looking forward to return to action this weekend. Seemed a bit strange, really, having no match last weekend. But there's some tasty ones to look forward to, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Now, I just want to get straight into it. I mentioned goosebumps, and I always, just the one thing that I remember last season is your commentary for Sebastian Pocanioli's free kick against Queen's Park Rangers being one of those goosebump moments. I think with football commentary and football, obviously, when the emotion hits, it's just such a massive impact, and that was one of them that had, that's probably my standout part of last season, I think.
Well, it certainly felt from where I was like a sort of, you know, a turning point, a crucial moment. And the wonderful great thing about being at Queen's Park Rangers is that you actually stand up to commentate, which is actually quite rare in radio. In television, you tend to stand up, but in radio, you tend to be sitting down. But there, you're on this sort of little stanchion with sort of scaffolding. And actually it means you stand up, which I prefer. And I think because it was a night game, because, you know, the away end was packed with Albion fans, and because, you know, Albion was sort of inching closer and closer towards what they thought might be, you know, a historical moment. And then you just get this wonderful bit of drama. And, you know, who would have thought that Sebastian Pocanioli would pop up with a goal? That was the crazy thing about it as well. So there's a little bit of shock. There's a little bit of joy. And of course, you know, the scenes as a commentator, you're there really to describe what's happening. Of course, it's difficult to keep a little bit of a lid on it when you're excited and happy yourself. But you do have to sort of maintain that sort of description of what is actually going on, and also just give everyone a feeling for what's going on as well. So you sort of have to capture what's actually happening, you know, how they're celebrating, who's ripping off their shirts, whatever, but at the same time, just bring to life the moment and the sort of, I suppose, you know, how people might be feeling in that special moment as well.
What happened was bedlam behind that goal.
Yes, that's it. I mean, and you don't practice these things. People ask me, you know, Johnny, how do you go about your commentaries? What preparation do you do? Well, of course, I do loads of preparation, but, you know, 90% of it doesn't actually get used because it never quite pans out like you thought it would. And of course, there, as a commentator, some people script things. I don't tend to script things. Maybe beforehand people have little introductions that they might script, which is, I think, is fine, and I do that sometimes. But actually, I think for moments like that, you can't plan for what you're going to say. You just have your fingers very tightly crossed that what comes out of your mouth is going to sound half decent.
Absolutely. And I think the atmosphere must sort of create the kind of tone that you present during the game.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, it's difficult sometimes. I mean, obviously, I've been away to, say, Rochdale with the Albion or whatever it may be, and you can't quite conjure up, you know, the quite the same atmosphere because of the stadium. I mean, that's just inevitable. But, you know, a packed out Amex or whether it's, you know, a special moment away from home is, and that was a good thing about the QPR game. I was quite close to the Albion fans, whereas sometimes you might find in the commentaries, you know, I'm getting overexcited, but actually can't hear a great deal because I'm in row Z up at, you know, at Middlesbrough or Burnley or something, and I'm on the back row, and actually the Albion fans are probably about half a mile away. So, but saying that, the Albion fans, you do generally catch them on the effects, Mike, no problem whatsoever.
Steve, goosebump moment from JC?
Oh, yeah. I'd say it was absolute bedlam in my lounge as well at the time.
Well, that was it, wasn't it? I think the emotions got over, you know, got over people, and that's what sort of took people on. I think, you know, there's different types of emotion as well, isn't there? If you think about Bobby Zamora coming back to the club, you know, and some of those goals that he scored, crucial goals, you know, winning goals, you know, goals that got the Albion points, that was a different kind of emotion because, of course, this was this legend and you know, he coming back to the club, is it going to work? You know, he's not quite the same player, but can he do something? And yes, he can. That was the answer. And, of course, everybody, you know, in blue and white's urging him to be a success when he comes back. And as he always does, he delivers.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about last season. Did you feel at the beginning of the season this, obviously with the disappointment of Middlesbrough the year before, obviously you had to commentate out on that game. And at the end of that game, everyone was bitterly disappointed. Coming back the following season, we had a little bit of a rocky start in August. Did you still sense that maybe we could be as successful as we were?
I think because they retained certain players, I think that was the key. And I think that gave me confidence to think that the Seagulls would be up there again. No one else, I thought, particularly, you know, was a concern in terms of the quality. Of course, you always have the teams that are coming down. But actually, I think the fact that they kept certain players, you know, whether it was Dale Stevens or whatever, you know, they were just crucial players that stayed at the club, Lewis Dunk. And I think that gave me confidence to think that, you know, with this manager, this could happen. And I think, you know, with a steady start, but then as the season went on, you just felt they had those, that inner confidence. And maybe in the long run, it was a better thing. I know it's a terrible thing to say because you just want to get up no matter what. You cannot rely on the next season. But actually, it maybe gave him a little bit more time. We've discussed this a little bit about Burnley, who went down and then came back up probably stronger. Albion, maybe because they didn't quite go up. And if you go into the playoffs, then go up, you haven't got as much time to recruit. So you maybe a few panic buys. Actually, they didn't have that. Whereas actually, going up in April gave them that time to plan a little bit more, bring in a few players and be better prepared, perhaps. But no, I think, you know, probably halfway through that season, I thought they're going to be top three, basically. But it's whether it's automatic or playoffs. But luckily for everyone, they didn't have to go through the playoffs once again.
Absolutely. And then it culminated in that amazing home game against Wigan when we clinched, all but clinched, but because of our superior goal difference. Just give us an idea of about the experience of commentating on that game and especially the scenes afterwards.
Well, I think, you know, in a way I was a bit annoyed because the game that was at 5:30, it sort of, you know, I wanted it to be a definitive moment because as a commentator you want to know that is the moment. Of course, Albion won it and how appropriate, Solly March getting the goal and all that as a local boy. But actually, it was just a little bit annoying, I thought. This is before the game, I felt that it was annoying. But actually, as it turned out, it was a way of, really, it was a double celebration. And of course, the scenes when the players came up. I mean, I've been involved in emotional days and I will never forget, you know, with Dean and Elliot Bennett running back out of the porter cabins, you know, to celebrate when he'd been told not to, you know, his shirt ripped off and everything. You know, that was a wonderful moment. But actually, we were sort of engulfed. And because we were engulfed, I think, I'm not saying we had anything to do with it whatsoever, but it was quite nice for us who, you know, when you're just like the fans getting home at 5 a.m. from a Burnley away trip or Rotherham on a Tuesday night at 3 a.m. or whatever it may be, that actually we were able to sort of celebrate but also react because we had everybody around us. And, you know, I literally was holding on to my ISDN kit because if that lead had gone, we would have gone off air. So my priority was holding on to that, but at the same time trying to speak to both the players, Tony Bloom, Paul Barber and everyone else. And, you know, I will never forget, you know, I think I can't be 100% sure whether it was Jamie Murphy or Baram Carr, but I could feel the blades on my shoulder from his boot because he had one foot on the desk behind me, the other foot literally on the sort of curve of my neck and shoulder because he was just bouncing up and down and enjoying himself. But, you know, for me, it was just wonderful to be at the centre of things. And for Warren as well, as a former player, you know, to look back and see the smiles on all these, you know, guys' faces and just seeing what it meant to them, really.
And you literally were
joyous scenes.
Sorry, Johnny, you literally were at the centre of things because when the TV cameras were pointed at the players, there was you and Warren right in the thick of it, trying to keep your composure. because you're live on the radio, all the players around you celebrating, the whole crowd on the pitch. It was quite a scene.
Yeah, it was, and I couldn't really have asked for anything more as a commentator in a special moment, and the sort of double celebration as well, really, with the full time at the Amex, and then, you know, the full time with the Derby game and everything, and we did actually have, you know, like, we were piping through the sort of commentary bits from there as well, and, you know, and they were describing it, and they'll be popping open the champagne on the South Coast and everything, so it felt as well like, you know, that BBC local radio, which, you know, is following people no matter what, whether it's, you know, whatever the division, whatever the game, you know, you have to take the rough with the smooth. But on that day, you know, it was particularly special, probably one of the, you know, standout moments of my career. And I'll look back on it fondly, you know, forever, really.
Steve, any memories from that day?
Oh, yeah, it was a terrific day, wasn't it? I mean, it was just, you know, everything we'd ever dreamed of, really. It was just a shame that we couldn't go on and just clinch the league title, really. But the bigger picture was obviously to get promoted, and that's what happened. So, yeah, it was great. You know, I wish I'd been there, to be honest. But especially when you see all the, you know, footage afterwards of the players going down with the fans down West Street and everything else, it's just, yeah, phenomenal. There's not many clubs.
I think it's interesting you say that, actually, Steve, because, you know, I felt... Though, you know, for a lot of people, and especially in the top flight, sort of those days are gone because people are always under the spotlight, under the microscope. But actually to see people on the train, you know, rubbing it with the supporters, and I think really that sort of reflected Brighton and Hove as well, didn't it? You know, the way that what the club is a part of the community, that they can do that freely and not have any problems. They could just celebrate with everybody else. And I think that was really quite nice and quite charming in a way. And as you say, I mean, I think in the end, I packed up my kit about 11:15 that night from the Amex. I'd probably arrived there about 9 o'clock in the morning, just because of the sheer, you know, chaos afterwards as well. And actually, I think I was just so exhausted. Obviously, the one thing you want to do is sup a beer with everybody and celebrate. But actually, I think everyone was just so exhausted that they couldn't. But I think it was wonderful to see all those videos and people taking snaps of the players celebrating afterwards was just tremendous. And then the parade as well, you know. I know it's disappointing, and Warren often says, as a player, you're the most disappointed not to get that medal, because, you know, you want to win things as a player. That's how he describes it. He said I always wanted to win things, and they will probably be disappointed they didn't get that. But at the same time, those scenes on the seafront, that parade in the sunshine was quite astonishing.
You talk about the video and the coverage of not just the Wigan game and the scenes after, but the parade. And I'm not sure, I'm sure Steve probably feels the same, but as an expat, there's a little bit of me that's disappointed that I'm not in Brighton at that time. But, you know, for social media and all the videos and technology we've got today, you do, even from this side of the world, you still feel involved. You still get a sense of the emotion that's going on, which is kind of nice. And also with your commentary, obviously you're not just going out on BBC Sussex, you're going out to global listeners through Seagulls Online. Do you get a sense of that when you're commentating?
Yeah, I do. I remember, I mean, the tentacles of the club go out right across the world, and usually on the final day of the season, I always leave open that last sort of part of the show to just say to people, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, send us a message and I will send it out, because thank you for listening to us. And the places and the things that people are doing always amaze me, you know, wherever they may be. We've got a fair few in France. I think the States has really taken off with a lot of people over there. There's you guys down under, Singapore, places like that. People who are just on holiday still able to listen as well. So you definitely feel that there is that sort of community around the world that we're serving, really. And that's a nice thing, to have that dual thing that obviously, you know, we're available in Sussex for the league games, across the UK for the FA Cup games, and then across the world for everything along with that. And no, I definitely feel that. And I remember being away at Barnsley, I think, last game of the season. I think it was under Gus Poyet. I think it was a 0-0 draw. But all I did was basically just read out for an hour where everyone was and what they were doing. And but the more I did it, the more other people did it. So I thought it was just going to be, oh my God, this is going to be so lame. And there's nothing to talk about. The season is over. I'm away at Barnsley. It's nil-nil draw. There's no roof on the toilet. You know, what am I doing? Yeah. And actually, there you go. Here come the listeners, full pelt, right across the world with all their messages and what they're doing, what they thought of the season. Spectacular.
I'm sure Steve has told you about the influx of calls that he got because of Seagulls Down Under and Brighton getting winning promotion to the Premier League. Steve, just talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's quite phenomenal, really, from my point of view, because since starting the Seagulls Down Under thing, I think probably in the last couple of years, I've had contact with fans around the globe, and it's... you know, they come to me. I don't know why they come to me. I feel like a foreign ambassador for the club at times. But, you know, I get these emails, I get messages, people asking me how to start a supporters club. You know, like you say, Johnny, in the States, I've had people contacting me. There's a guy in Asia who started up a Facebook page, and I've sent people from Singapore, Hong Kong, Malaysia to his Facebook page. Got a guy in Brazil that started up a Facebook page that I'm in contact with, obviously the Dutch Seagulls, and it's quite phenomenal. And you know, I'm very proud of what I've done with the Seagulls Down Under, and a lot of people look at it and think, you know, we should do that in other parts of the world. But it's, for me, it's a full-time commitment, and it's just got bigger and bigger and bigger until, you know, it takes up a great deal of your time. And as I say to people, if you're going to do it, you've just got to be committed to do it, because it can eat into your lifestyle. I'm quite happy to do it. You know, my kids are a lot older now. A lot of people with younger kids don't have the time. But, you know, it's great to have contact with all these fans around the world. And, you know, and I discussed this with Paul Barber when I was over there. And it's quite phenomenal, really. I just, I'm in awe. And you know what? A lot of people, even people in the Seagulls Down Under, apart from close friends and obviously Richard and everything, I don't often tell the story about all these people that contact me and what goes on behind the scenes with running Seagulls Down Under. Because it's quite phenomenal. It's, mind-blowing at times.
Do you think, Steve, without Seagulls Down Under, you would be as connected to the club as you are? Not necessarily in a contacts way, but in an emotional way as well. You know, actually, obviously, you're a Brighton fan and you love watching them, but you are emotionally connected to the club through the supporters club.
I think I still would be. Like, you know, most fans that have emigrated to different parts of the world, you've still got that connection, even more so now because of social media and, you know, especially in the Premier League, because nearly every country outside of the UK can watch every match live. So sorry, Johnny, I don't hear your commentary as much now as I used to.
That's okay. I understand. Don't worry.
But I do listen to you before the game. I listen. And I listen to you and Warren. But, you know, I did listen to the half time up until my Seagull TV thing got cut and I didn't renew it. But, you know, it's great to listen to you two boys talking before the game. And obviously, you know, we listen to what Warren has to say, and he's pretty well educated in the football. And it's great, you know. And I think, so going back to your original question, I think I'd still be as involved with the club if I wasn't running Seagulls Down Under. I'd still have that contact. And I think other Albion fans around the world still have that contact, even if they're not linked to a supporters club.
Okay, awesome. Okay, you are listening to the Albion Roar Down Under podcast, sponsored by Pure Media, the full-service video production company based here in Auckland. Visit www.pureproductions.co.nz for more information on how Pure can create a fully customised, crafted video for your business. And of course, if you'd like to get in touch with us, our email is albionroardownunder@gmail.com. Just rolls off the tongue, that does. Right, Johnny, let's go back to the start. So how did you get into commentating?
How did I get into commentating? Well, I mean, I know lots of people say it's something that I always wanted to do when they talk about, you know, a job that they love. But actually, for me, it really was. Me and my brother used to play a lot of Sabutio when we were younger. In fact, I think I'm not quite sure whether we still got it, but once we did a full ring binder of every single game from the last 32 all the way through to the final, with each of us playing for both sides against each other.
Wow.
To make sure that it was a fair. I think Poland beat England in the final, but I think even then I kind of first started sort of, you know, commentating. You know, I think actually at some point we actually have a recording of me saying, "And there goes the final whistle."
Brilliant.
You know, aged seven. Literally on my like lounge floor on the carpet, you know, doing that. So that's how I sort of, you know, my sort of, I suppose it was first in my conscious. My dad actually made me a Chrysalis radio when I was very young. A bit of a mistake really, because I used to spend every night with it underneath my pillow, with the earplug in one ear, listening to Peter Jones and listening to radio commentary. And that, and that's how I sort of, you know, I suppose first experienced live football on the radio. And of course, there wasn't a great deal of TV a long time ago, showing my age now. But that's how I sort of first. I mean, I did used to, you know, play rugby, play football and rugby and cricket, you know, just sort of, you know, as a youngster and stuff. And of course, you know, you want to play and enjoy it as well. But then I worked in London and I suppose just had a normal job, really. But at one point, I just sort of thought, you know what, if I don't do it now, I tried at school. I said at school, could, you know, they had these careers days and someone said to me, what do you want to do? And I said, well, you know, Des Lynam was my hero. And I said, you know, something like that would be great. And they were just like, no, we were thinking about maybe bringing in a teacher or, you know, a policeman to talk to you. And I'm like, no, I don't really want to do that. But of course, getting into it then was very, very difficult. There was no sort of natural route, I think, into it. Whereas now people, you know, there's, you know, thousands of media students and journalism students. But actually, when I was, you know, in my 30s, I actually decided to retrain. Someone, I used to work for Channel 5 Broadcasting, and one of the guys there, the head of sports, said, you know, the best thing you could do is probably go back and retrain. So I retrained as a multimedia journalist with an interest in sports. And I suppose, you know, the rest is history, really. But that qualification helped me really sort of, because, you know, you needed that because there were other people that did, whereas maybe, you know, sort of in the 80s, it really was just a case of just chancing your arm and, you know, seeing if you were any good, and maybe to a certain extent who you knew as well was quite useful. And of course, I didn't have many contacts in the media world, so that didn't really help me. But, you know, with a bit of hard graft, and I managed to get a work placement at BBC South Today. And sort of the first thing I actually did was recording videos of local competitors at the Olympics. And just charting them. And then after a bit, I started just recording what I, you know, a sum up of the day, and they seemed to go down quite well. And then it sort of went on from there, really. And then I got my opportunity. I started in non-league. I used to present a non-league football show, you know, going to places like, you know, Dorchester and Weymouth and, you know, Havant and, you know, I mean, even Eastbourne Borough and places like that right across the South Coast. To cover non-league football, and then, you know, just gradually sort of worked hard at it, cut my teeth on it, and now I'm obviously covering the Albion.
So how long have you been at BBC Sussex? Was it Southern Counties Radio before that? And so how long have you been commentating on the Albion?
Yeah, so it's just coming up to 10 years. I suppose it's 9 years now, I think. So, yeah, what was Southern Counties Radio is now called BBC Sussex and BBC Surrey. So we cover Sussex, Surrey and North East Hampshire. You know, we also cover the likes of Crawley and Aldershot and Woking as well. Obviously, mine, you know, sort of devoted to the Seagulls in terms of my day-to-day, but obviously I do cover lots of other things as well. And if I'm lucky, I manage to get down to Hove to watch a bit of the cricket if Harmsey will let me get on the microphone every so often as well, and have a bit of cake with him. So yeah, no, it's, you know, it's a great patch. You know, we don't have certain sports, but obviously, you know, the big thing for us is the Albion, and you know, I'm delighted to be, you know, the main focus on that, and the lead commentator, and you know, I enjoy it thoroughly.
So I think I know your answer to the next question, but you've had a few co-commentators in your time working, commentating the Albion. Who's your favourite, and have you got any interesting stories about them?
I don't have a favourite, but they all are very different. I would say that. And sometimes when you listen back to bits of commentary, you're reminded. I mean, someone actually asked me the question the other day, because we were talking about Elliot Bennett getting promoted with Blackburn, and he scored the winner at Walsall's and to seal the title in the League One title. And you could actually hear someone go, "Get in." And someone said to me, who's that? I don't recognise that voice. And it was actually John Crumplin, and Football Genius. And it was like, but he was a wonderful summariser as well. You know, Johnny Byrne was so eloquent. He knew the game. He played it at the top level. You know, there's not much he didn't really know about football and had been there and done it, but it was a very calm figure. Funnily enough, the other day when we had Gordon Greer on the Albion Unlimited show, we played back, you know, his sum up of when the teams came out for the first game against Doncaster Rovers. Wonderful description from him. Guy Butters elbowing me in the face on the first game with Gus Poyet in charge against Southampton. Literally, the kit went right across the desk. His elbow went flying up towards my face because he was so emotional about them winning. I think when Croft scored, bang, straight into my face. And I'm like trying to talk, but, you know, because he just completely lost control and he hadn't been doing it. I think it was probably his first time, but, you know, we've had some great giggles with Guy up at Blackpool away at about -3 and all sorts of things like that. But, you know, Adam Hinshelwood's done it for us as well. He's a top lad, but wanted to go into coaching. But, you know, now Warren is, you know, the mainstay. I know he's missing the Man United game, which he's absolutely gutted about because he's a former Man United season ticket holder from when he was at Wigan. But, no, he'll be missing that one. And we've got Adam Virgo coming back. And, you know, Virgs did quite a few games with me. And I have to say, you know, I do feel really, you know, he did his first ever commentary with me, Albion against Crawley at the Broadfield Stadium on a pre-season friendly. And that's where it started for him. And look at him now. But Warren has been a real loyal servant to, I think, the Albion and our coverage because, you know, yes, he was at the centre of things with me on that day when they beat Wigan. But, you know, people very quickly forget that he was the one that was, you know, running up and down the country, you know, in such a northern division with whether it was Leeds, Sheffield, Huddersfield, Blackburn, Burnley, you know, and he has a job as well. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I do this as sort of my living, you know, 5 days a week, you know, sometimes six, whatever it may be. But, you know, he was doing on top of that because he loves it as well. But I think, you know, Warren, you know, everyone has their strengths and weaknesses, but Warren, he knows players. When we were playing, you know, MK Dons or whatever, he'd say, yeah, that left back, he used to be at Shrewsbury, played four games, went to see him as a scout. I mean, he just knows these, but I've never even heard of them, half of them, you know, and I'm just thinking, how does he know these people? He's coming on as a sub for MK Dons to make his third appearance, and he knew who he was, and I'm thinking, oh my word. So, you know, everyone has their strengths and weaknesses, obviously, but we have a giggle, especially when we're travelling the motorways on the way home, but we have to keep ourselves sane, I think, sometimes.
Definitely. You guys make a great team. One thing I like about Warren is he says it as it is. So, you know, when he says something, you do believe it, you do take it in, and you probably 9 times out of 10 agree with it.
Yeah, I think over time you get respects because you tell it as it is. I think initially sometimes people get, you know, I mean, ultimately I work for the BBC, so I'm basically trying to give objective coverage. Yep. If that's the right word, objective coverage, coverage. And certain to a certain extent, so is Warren. Slightly different, I think, for him. But to begin with, you know, people feel always being a bit negative and all this sort of stuff, because obviously people are disappointed if they've lost. But actually, I think over time, people appreciate, you know, this is the man that came up with this season. Am I watching Brighton or Barcelona? You know, he enjoys it when they win. He doesn't enjoy it when they lose. But when they do lose, he wants to know why and how they can rectify it. And I think that over time gives the listeners, you know, a great deal of respect.
It's constructive criticism at the end of the day, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, you know, if people can back it up, that what I don't like in terms of punditry is when people just say stuff and it's based on I don't know what, you know, whereas if someone says, you know, the reason this is happening is because of X and Y, well, it's justified, or is if they could do this, maybe they would create more opportunities, or maybe they would stop conceding from free kicks if they did this, you know, you know, because it doesn't seem to be working. You know, trying to be constructive, I think, is helpful. Whereas when people just say, you know, this player isn't fit to wear the shirt or whatever it is, you know, who does that help? Why not? You know, whereas, you know, Warren might say, look, you know, Pascal Gross is one of the, you know, probably the buy of the Premier League season. And he's saying if he had a little bit of extra pace, he would be playing for a top six side in the Premier League. You know that, but you know, he's not criticising him. He's just saying that, you know, he's got all these great attributes, but also you've got to remember that, you know, and that's why maybe he's playing for Brighton rather than playing maybe for Liverpool or whatever.
Steve, you got any comments?
Yeah, I think with Warren, he says what a lot of people are feeling sometimes. And, you know, it's good when you're, especially if you're not at the game and you haven't seen it and you're listening to it. And he says, you know, certain things that you, you've listened to over the course of the game and you think, oh, that's maybe he's right, you know. There's quite a lot of the things that he says that some fans maybe are afraid to say through fear of, I don't know if that's the right word, but there's a lot of things said on social media. And, you know, I hate social media. I mean, the only reason I use it is obviously to keep the sports club going. But there's a lot of people that don't, in my mind, have a clue what they're talking about. Whereas when Warren says it, you respect what he says because he's been there and done it, you know, and he's,
Yeah, I think it's a good point, Steve. I think because you have to have experienced it because, you know, I don't know what it's like. And he readily admits that, you know, playing in, say, the 80s and 90s is maybe a little bit different to now. But, you know, at least you have that insight of what it's like being a player, how people might be thinking about nerves or certain occasions, or certain pitches, certain opponents as well. He's happy to disagree. I mean, if anything, I'm probably, you know, Johnny Positive, I suppose, and I'm always being a little bit, you know, or maybe you should have done better. And he'll just disagree and say, Johnny, you're wrong. That is awful. You know what I mean? He's quite happy to disagree with me and with other people, but he also respects other people's opinions. It's just he doesn't agree with it. You know, and you can't really ask for more than that. And what I always think is sometimes in the sum up, when at the end of games and he sort of sums it up, what he's very good at, he's going for sort of the key points, you know, the three key factors of today. And 9 times out of 10, I know people, it's a different interview listening to Chris Hughton than it is to Gus Poyet, obviously. But 9 times out of 10, that is reflected in the reaction from players and manager. What he sort of said, you know, yeah, those two early goals killed us. They couldn't come back. You've got to respect the fact that they found a response. But in the end, you're never going to be able to come back from 2-0 down against a side of that quality. You know, you virtually could switch those words and put them into the mouths of people. You know, and that's what he's giving you. And 9 times out of 10, he's usually, you know, spot on. He's very good at analysing games. Look, Johnny, in a game, he'll say, look, they've switched, you know, they've gone to a 3 in the middle. They've dropped him. They're getting overrun there, so they're trying to react. So very good analysis of what's actually happening in a game as well. So, you know, from that point of view, you know, I think it's it gives the commentary a real boost. And also, I think, you know, if I'm being honest, I think he makes more of an effort now than maybe when he first started. You know, I think when he first started, you sort of rocked up, you know, had a quick look at the paper and away you go. And I'm being honest, you know, but I think now he thinks about it. He has bullet points on everything that he wants to talk about on a specific day, and he sets the agenda of what he wants to talk about as well. But if I throw him in a curveball, he's always happy to answer as well.
One thing you just said about your commentary, you have to be a bit diplomatic. One thing I would say, Johnny, is that at 3 o'clock in the morning when we're listening to you, you have a calming and soothing tone to your voice, which is quite pleasant at that time in the morning. Now, I know that sounds a bit weird, but when you're sort of trying to stay awake, listening to the Albion, you're kind of tense, the game is close, you do have this kind of calming influence over people listening, I would say.
Well, I'm not sure my kids would necessarily agree with you there, but when I have to try and get them to go to school in the morning, but that's very kind, and I take that as a compliment. I think the one thing that you taught as a commentator is you've always got to have somewhere to go, if that makes any sense. So we talked about those special moments, whether it's Pocognoli, whether it's Solly March, whether it's Liam Breakup, whether it's Fran Sandaza, I don't know, whoever it may be. You've always got to go somewhere, because if you're at the full pelt constantly, you've got nowhere to go because your voice gets tight and you've got, you know, you can only go as to a certain high pitch. But also, it's actually quite an exhausting listen for people. 90 minutes is actually quite a long time to be talking. I mean, I actually do it for nearly 4 hours because I do the hour beforehand and I generally do the hour afterwards as well. So you have to sort of pace yourself to a certain degree. But also, I think, you know, you have to... I don't want people to be exhausted listening to me, you know, the constant pelting of, you know, I mean, it can be a bit overwhelming at times. But at the same time, you know, you need to keep up with play and you need to sort of, you know, I mean, I do love when things build, though, to a tense finish in a game. I mean, there's nothing better than thinking, right, 8 minutes to go plus stoppage time, 1-1. This could be it. I don't know what's going to happen, but that's the joy. That is the joy of the job that I do, is that at 1 minute to three, I haven't got a clue, and no one has got a clue about what's going to happen, you know, and that's the joy of it. And that's why fans travel around the world, because they don't know whether they're going to see a 0-0 or whether they're going to beat Manchester United for the first time in their history.
It's interesting you say that. The flip side of that, you know, building the emotion to maybe a crescendo with the Albion score in the last minute. If it all goes the other way and the Albions concede a last minute goal, and I know you're a total professional, but does that then, do you feel flat after that? And then when the game ends, you've got to read a few texts and messages and they're probably negative. And then you've got to go and interview the manager who's probably not too happy or disappointed. And some of the players that are the same. I mean, do you feel a bit flat after that?
Yeah, I think it is difficult. I won't lie. I think you have to tell it like it is, for starters. And you know, another team may deserve credit for what they've managed to achieve. I mean, you know, take the first 45 minutes of the Palace game, or the first 30 minutes anyway. You know, Albion were just blown away to a certain degree. But you've got to sort of tell it like it is. But obviously it is a bit deflating at times. I mean, the most difficult games to commentate on are a 0-0 draws with nothing's at stake and there's nothing happening and no one can be bothered, you know. They do happen, and that's when you really earn your onions, because that's when you've got to try and make it a worthwhile listen. It might be that you have a bit of fun with it, to be honest. But in those really sort of desperate moments, I think it's about analysis, it's about perspective, and I suppose then you start the sort of the autopsy on why it happened to a certain degree, and how they can. But I think, you know, I suppose that's it. You do always have to slightly stand back, you know, half a yard away. Because otherwise, as you say, as a fan, and we sometimes speak to fans, they don't want to talk because they're annoyed and they're you know, really, really, you know, peeved off. So they don't want to, like, you know, speak. I understand that, but I have to speak. So, you know, and it might be difficult for Warren in that last hour. He's frustrated. He's, you know, kicking the desk because he's frustrated with a certain player who gave away a penalty in the last minute, or chopped someone down when they didn't need to, or missed an open goal in the last minute. He's frustrated as well. But our job is to keep talking and keep people interested and spark debate as well. So, no, it isn't easy.
So, Johnny, you touched on it a while ago. You have a pretty full-on day. You're on air for like 4 hours. So I'm just interested about how your day goes for, let's say on Saturday, you obviously have to travel up to Burnley. Will you go the night before? And then when you do get there on the Saturday, how's the day pan
out? What's the plan? Well, this Saturday I will leave home. We're actually going up on the day within Warren's shifts that he sort of works in his proper job, I call it. You know, it's more difficult for him to sort of stay over or stay before. So we will leave probably about 7:15, 7:30 on Saturday morning. Drive up to Burnley. I usually do previews on match days at 10 to 12 into our mid-morning show to set the scene with Danny Pike, who's a big fan of the Albions and has been to lots of games and done shows from the Amex and Old Trafford as well. You know, then we get straight into doing maybe some social media, whether it might be, you know, tweeting some photos and videos of, you know, the ground. It might be somewhere Albion have never been to. So when I went to West Ham, for instance, you know, Albion's first ever visit to the London Stadium, a Facebook Live explaining where the Albion fans will be seated, or, you know, where they'll come into the ground and what it looks like on match day. Then probably head into the media lounge, try and get a programme, see what programme notes are, what managers and chairmen are saying before the game, because sometimes that gives you a few clues as to the agenda of the day. Then another preview into another programme around lunchtime. And then I start at 2 o'clock. So the difficulty with presenting is the team use breaks pretty much as I start talking. So most people have a presenter and a sort of different commentator, and that commentator can then sort of digest the team news. But I'm usually pretty au fait with what's going to happen. So I can sort of be pretty close that when it does drop on social media, or when I eventually get handed a team sheet, I can actually broadcast it relatively quickly. But now with Twitter, you know, everyone knows what the team is, so I don't worry too much about that, really. It's more the analysis of Warren than that. Then a full on hour presenting, commentary, half time, and then let me see, second half. And then, you know, for some away games, I do the interviews. Obviously, Adrian Harms, who's, you know, covered the Albion for probably coming up to 3 or 4 years now, I think maybe 4 or 5. It comes to some of the away games. He's not coming this weekend. And the final was to be presented down in the studio. Or for the Amex games, I present I say a phone-in. We don't really get many people phoning in anymore because things are so good, I guess. When Sammy Hoopier was in charge, we had a fair few calls, that's for sure. and then through till 6, and then a chance to pack up your equipment and head off home. So this weekend, you know, we'll leave probably about 6-ish. I don't know, with a stop, probably get back 10, 11 or something. So, yeah, it's a pretty full-on day, that's for sure. But, you know, you've got to travel to these games, and there's some great ones coming up, that's for sure, especially those last three matches.
Yeah, because obviously the first season, Brighton being in the Premier League, it must have been an incredible experience going to all these, you know, new grounds, big club grounds. Seeing, you know, new and improved media facilities from, I guess, you know, disrespect to some of the Championship sides and their grounds. Must have been quite unique.
Well, I think you'd be surprised, actually, I have to say. Yeah? I mean, the only thing is that sort of, for a lot of these stadiums, that they've been around for a long time. So Everton, you know, my leg was spasming after about 20 minutes because the seating was so tight. You got your equipment on top of you, as any BBC local radio person who's been to Goodison Park will know, it's pretty bad. Manchester United, it was pretty appalling. The seat, I think, was falling off when I got into it, and you know, the wires were coming off the wall where the ISDN locks in and stuff like that. So it doesn't necessarily work that way. Saying that, obviously some of them are excellent, and even Crystal Palace had a new media lounge when we went there recently, and that had an improvement. So, and they have to for the Premier League to have certain facilities, of course, as well. But, you know, I mean, some of them I've been to, some of them I haven't. I you know, there's still, I think, 6 teams that I haven't covered across the whole of the top 4 divisions or been to. So I'm still hoping to tick those off my list at some stage. But no, it's great. I think for me, though, the most interesting thing is seeing how a team like the Albion cope in the Premier League necessarily. I mean, it's lovely to go to the stadiums. I love it. I love commentating on the best players in this country. But at the same time as well, the intrigue is, of course, how the Albion are going to do against the likes of Manchester United or Manchester City, and how they're going to cope in their debut season. And you know, thankfully, they've coped very well.
So would you say they surpassed your expectations at the beginning of the season?
Yes, I think they have, actually. Not necessarily in terms of sort of like, you know, I'm not listing points and position, because I think it's been a bit of an anomaly of a Premier League season, really, for the way that things have gone points-wise. But I think, you know, I suppose maybe I shouldn't be surprised, but, you know, they've not really had a drubbing from anyone. I mean, you know, Chelsea scored those 2 early goals, but actually Albion could have quite easily scored a couple early on at the Amex. Liverpool ran away with it a little bit, but that was because Albion were trying to get something from the game and got caught in the break. And even in that game, they had their chances. But no, I think they've been more robust, I think, than maybe I thought they would. But maybe with Chris Hughton in charge, I should have expected them to be like that. That's not to say that, you know, I didn't think, you know, that they would do okay. I'm just saying that, you know, we've seen some teams get, you know, go under the cosh, like, you know, Swansea beating 5-0 by Man City or whatever it may be. But, you know, Albion haven't been like that. And I think, you know, I know it's a bit of a something that is trotted out quite a lot by the manager, but, you know, they have been in pretty much every single game. And I think that maybe is something that was a bit of a surprise.
So 36 points. Do you think we're safe?
No, I don't think they're safe. Only because I think teams are capable of putting together, you know, a couple of a couple of victories here and there. I think, you know, with the way that the teams that below them and the teams that they've got to play would make it tricky. But at the end of the season, you sometimes get some slightly freakish results. Mm. We might say Southampton against Manchester City at home on the final day. Well, are they going to get anything from that? Well, I think if you're preparing for a World Cup or ready to get your flip-flops on and head on holiday, they might get something from that game. That might help the Albion when they go to the Etihad. I'm not sure. It's slightly different, I think, away from home on their home territory. So I think you have to be a little bit cautious. I'd say I'd feel a little bit more comfortable if they can get something from the Burnley game, which is something I truly believe that they can, that's for sure. But what I think the Spurs game proved is that the Albion, are particularly at home, you know, can really, really pull out the performances if required. So I think, you know, the Man United game might be something they can target to get something from that. And that'll just alleviate any fears. Right at the beginning of the season, Warren said to me, Johnny, if Albion get 38 points, 1 point from every single game, they will stay up. And do you know what? He's probably right.
Mm. It's been quite an unusual season with so many teams involved in that relegation battle. Steve, do you think 36 points is enough? Or do you think, yep, we definitely need one more point here or there?
Yeah, I mean, I think we do. I think we do. I think Burnley are beatable, to be honest. I've watched them a few times this season. I don't think they can handle pace at the back. I have noticed that. They're quite resilient. They're definitely resilient. But if they do go a goal down, you know about it because they're all out attack. But Johnny, was there a time for you this season where things sort of changed? Because for me, the first third of the season was we were playing a very sort of cagey defensive type game. And then I think maybe it was the United game away where we actually went out and attacked them, took them on. And then we started doing it a bit more. And, you know, there was the West Ham away game and then we started playing more on the front foot. And for me, that playing on the front foot just sort of seemed to release something in us.
I'd say when you say release something, I think to a certain degree, they slightly released the handbrake. Because I think maybe that's a little bit harsh because, you know, they did try and attack in the early part of the season. But I think you're right. I think around Christmas time, I think they just started to trust each other a little bit more as players, and maybe the manager trusted the players a little bit more as well, that they could mix both, you know, trying attacking intent with defensive solidity as well. And ultimately, you do need to win games in the Premier League. You know, you can't just go drawing your way through things. And I think that changed, and that gave them a bit of impetus. I think the FA Cup really did them a favour, because they were in that little sticky patch and then they pulled out a couple of wins against, you know, it was a second-rate Palace side that came down to the Emirates because they had so many injuries. Middlesbrough, they got another win. And it just sort of built a little bit of momentum, a little bit of belief. I know they're a bit sort of like cliched, but I think that did help them. And then I think they just started to believe a little bit more. And actually, Albion can hurt teams. Now they've got the pace of Knockhart, Izquierdo, March, you know, the invention of Gross as well. They have an ability to hurt teams. And I think they just needed that sort of, you know, the sort of go ahead, yeah, go for it. Then and that's what happened around Christmas time. And I think that put them on that run that kind of probably has got them to where they are now, really.
There's almost a bit of untapped potential in our squad because we've bought Jurgen Locadia for 14 million and he's only really played a couple of games. And that obviously is down to Glenn Murray's form. But there's even more to come from the Albion, I think. There's some players in there who haven't had as much game time as they would have liked that I think could really improve the squad, improve the team when they do come in, maybe for next season.
Yeah, but you can't keep everyone happy, unfortunately. I don't think Solly March will necessarily want to be sitting on the subs bench continually week in, week out in the Premier League. I know there are a lot of teams and a lot of clubs that are admirers of him. So I think, yes, you've got that, but you've got also the ability to sort of, you know, keep everyone happy, which is, you know, there will be people departing. And obviously, that I think they need to continue to strengthen, because what you will find as well as obviously in the second season is that if they do stay up, that people will know a lot more about them. They'll be better prepared for them. And they'll have strategies to try and beat them. So, you know, whereas actually no one even knew what Davy Prupper was like when he first started, and actually had a bit of a shaky first game, didn't he? But, you know, he's grown into a great player, but now you maybe know more about him. Pascal Gross might be a similar. Izquierdo, he can't become too predictable. That's the thing. You know, if he always wants to come inside, we'll show him on the outside. Those sorts of things. So I think to a certain degree, you're right, there's a load of untapped talent in terms of players who aren't necessarily, you know, playing week in, week out. And Bram Kyle was very frustrated not to be in the side, but he's come in and done really, really well. But what do you do when Prupper's are available again? So I think it's a difficult balancing act. People might leave. I think it's inevitable. The likes of Toma Hemed, maybe, who's not really got a look in, who started the season up front. But at the same time, they will need to supplement that. But no, I think the recruitment's been excellent. I don't think you could really sort of go around and fault anything. I mean, look at Matty Ryan. I mean, ultimately, if Albion stay up, you could say some of those saves that he's made, whether it be Stoke penalty, whether it's, you know, the three double saves this season, you know, right there, he's probably at really crucial times in games. He's been a massive addition. But also, you know, there are people sitting there, Connor Goldson. I mean, does he want to spend another season not involved because Duncan Duffy are there? And, you know, does he go out on loan and they bring in another central defender? So there's a few sort of decisions, I think, to be made by the manager and the management team.
Going back to Matty Ryan, we can't not talk about Matty Ryan being Albion Roar Down Under.
Of course.
How impressed have you been with Matty Ryan? You talk about the penalty save against Stoke. It reminded me of the important penalty save that David Stockdale made against Sheffield Wednesday last year. Right at a crucial time, and then obviously Dunk cleaned the player out. Possibly could have been another penalty, but still, it was such an important save. If we'd lost that game, it could have just affected, had a knock-on effect from games in the future.
Well, not only a knock-on effect for the Albion, but a knock-on effect for Stoke. Stoke would have had another 2 points, and they wouldn't have been as far down. Now, you might say, okay, now they're, you know, poor form and whatever, and they've slipped away. But at that juncture, they weren't that cast adrift. So actually, for them, it was actually a massive... And you need three teams to be worse than you to avoid going down. Yeah. So, no, absolutely crucial. And as I say, crucial times. I mean, I think people were a little bit worried when he first came about his height, because the general trend is to have very tall keepers nowadays that can get down. But of course, in terms of shot stopping, you know, I'm not sure there's that many that better, to be honest. I mean, you know, maybe Pickford is a good shot stopper. You know,
he's
there was
not that
a bit
tall.
Of a concern. No, he's not that tall. No, I agree. But it makes it easier. I mean, you look at Joe Hart, who's analysed to be said, well, look, he always gets getting beaten low to his left-hand side. Well, maybe that's because he's so tall that he can't get down and he's heavily right-sided. So there's always that sort of factor as well. So it helps him from that point of view. But actually, when he comes and claims crosses, it seems to be okay. And no, I think he's been a revelation. I think what, for me as well, I think he's massive in the dressing room. I really do. I think he is a real character. He's driven, he's focused, but he knows, you know, that how privileged he is to be in the position he is. And he never gets it out of perspective, always goes and speaks to the fans. And I imagine, you know, he's a good person to have in there. You need a good blend. And I think that's what Albion have got. They've got a good blend of good youngsters like March and Dunk, who are now maybe a little bit more professional than they were than they first started out. But you've also got some old hands in there as well. And some people who are, you never quite know whether people are going to thrive in the Premier League. And, you know, pretty much everybody has managed to do that, maybe just to lesser and larger degrees. But no, I think Matty Ryan is really important for them, both on and off the pitch.
I just love the fact he celebrates every goal with all the other players. I've never seen another goalkeeper do that, sprinting 50 yards to celebrate with the other players.
Well, at the awards night, the other night, you know, Izquierdo's goal against West Ham actually won the top prize. I didn't think it was the best goal. I think the team goal was better. And I think he actually agreed with that. But, you know, he's running half the length of the pitch and he meets Matt Ryan on the halfway line. So Ryan's, you know, already done 40 yards, you know, and I don't imagine he's as fast as he's geared to get there, and he can't quite catch him, but that's it. He's living and breathing every single minute, and he's loving every minute.
We've got about 5 minutes left of the show. We'll talk about the Burnley game and what we need to do to potentially get the point. Well, I mean, a point would be great, but if we get 3 points and Southampton lose, which you never know, we will be safe with three games to go. And I think Steve has always said, done and dusted by Burnley.
And people have been going on about the last three games of the season, all right, the Man City games being thrown in there now because of the FA Cup. But all along I've been saying, whatever happens, we've got to get it all done and dusted by the time we leave the pitch at Burnley. And then nothing's changed. So the three games that they are now, were, it was two, but the three games are just a bonus game. You know, we go out and enjoy ourselves and, you know, relax and maybe take a few teams on, you know?
I think there's a few things in this one for me. Burnley have done brilliantly. There's no two ways about it. They know what they're doing. But actually, when I look at it player for player, I don't think Albion have got anything to fear. You know, Ashley Barnes, we know everything about him. Chris Wood, know everything about him. Not to say they're not bad players. They're good players, but they know about them as well. Jack Cork's been, I think, a vital player for Burnley as well. You know, they're good, organised. They're very good at home. All those kind of factors are in there. But I don't think Albion have got anything to fear this weekend. The only concern is really, you know, the away form for the Seagulls, I think, has been, you know, a little bit of a disappointment to a certain degree, in the sense that, you know, yeah, beating West Ham away when they were on rock bottom, and Swansea away when they were all over the shop. Can they sort of muster up a performance like they did at home against the likes of Arsenal and Spurs away from home?
Steve, I always like to end on your prediction. It cheers me up for the evening. So what is your prediction for the Burnley game?
Well, you know, John, I've been saying a scrappy 1-0 win, because I take a scrappy 1-0 win in every game, to be honest. But, you know, I think if we go out there on the front foot and we take them on, there's no reason why we can't score, you know, a couple of goals and walk off there with a 2-0 win. I just think we just need to go with a bit of belief, and we can get the job done and relax for the next three games.
And Johnny, on Seagulls Unlimited, it was a 1-1 draw for you.
Yeah, I do stand by that. I think, you know, been plenty of draws between the two sides. I think to a certain degree, Albion are Burnley's bogey team, really. I think they can keep the crowd quiet for the first 20, 25 minutes. I think they can definitely get at least a point. I think there'll be goals. I wouldn't be surprised if Ashley Barnes gets involved from some point of view, whether it's a goal or maybe a card. At some point, but mixing it up with his old mates as well. So it should be an interesting, but I'm going to stick by my 1-1.
Awesome. Johnny, thanks very much for joining us on the Albion Raw Down Under. It's been great to talk to you. It's been great to get some insight into your daily routine of commentating on the Albion. Let's hope the Albion can stay up and you're commentating on them in the Premier League next season.
Great stuff. Thanks very much, guys.
You have been listening to the Albion Raw Down Under, sponsored by Pure Media. Thanks again for listening, and tune in next week when we'll have another podcast for you. Okay,